we have now Peggy, who will introduce herself, and she's going to tell us all about the Ship of Theseus.
Well, I hope not quite all about, because I'd like you to do some work on your own when you leave. I've gathered that you can hear me. As I said, it's easier to be heard when you've been a teacher, so that helps. I have to warn you that the teaching I did for most of my life was of children of special needs. And the talks I give mostly, as I say, are to WIs. So my experience of arranging talks is somewhere between those two. This could be a slightly different talk from those you're used to. But anyway, who are you? No, I didn't say how are you. I said, who are you? And if you know who you are, well, maybe you're different from most of us. Could you say exactly what you meant by who you are? During the war, you had to have an identity card, and I believe some other countries today still have identity cards. So is that the job done? Yeah? You just look at your card and it tells you who you are. That's it. No more problem.
That's what we do at reception.
Well, there we go. I'm not sure that this talk's necessary now. So, it's not a very easy question to answer, and I want you to hold it in your mind, because we'll be coming back to that anon. This thought experiment, the Ship of Theseus, has been posing the question, in some form or other, for over 2,000 years. We're not talking about something thought up in the 20th century. It's a thought experiment, and therefore it's not a scientific experiment. It's not asking what will happen if, it's asking, in this particular case anyway, how can we describe what has happened under varying different circumstances. So let's see if I can work the this is where it all started. Do we want this overhead light on? Bless you, thank you. So, do you mind if I sit down? My legs won't stand me. The paradox posed by the ship of Theseus, he's the legendary founder of Athens and beloved of Ariadne, slayer of the Minotaur, even that one, and Heraclitus, who's called the Weeping Philosopher, mostly, I think, because of photographs like paintings like that. He was the one who said we can never step into the same river twice. And Plato, they both reference this particular puzzle, but it first appears in writing with Plutarch and his Life of Theseus, which, thanks to modern technology, all you have to do is type in and get it online for free. It's amazing, isn't it, what you can do? So I'm going to tell you exactly what he says. The ship wherein Theseus... Oh, you might like to look at it. This is not it. The ship wherein Theseus and the youth of Athens returned had 30 oars, this looks roughly right, and was preserved by the Athenians even down to the time of Demetrius Phalereus, for they took away the old planks as they decayed, putting in new and stronger timber in their place, insomuch that this ship became a standing example among philosophers for the logical question of things that grow, one side holding that the ship remained the same, and the other contending that it was not the same. Well, 2,000 years later, hundreds of philosophy books, you've got philosophers still on both sides of the question, but they've invented a few more questions in between the two to skirt around it. This is allegedly, by the way, a replica of some form of ancient Greek ship, so it's probably a reasonable approximation. It gives you something to picture, anyway. But over the years... And in the modern day, there are other ways of expressing a very similar or identical problem. Now, as I say, I give talks to groups of people. So I've been doing some really non-peer-reviewed, formal research, informal research. And I've asked each of them, whenever I've gone in, whether none of them had any connection with philosophy, whether they had heard of the Ship of Theseus. And I got a uniform no from every single group. But then I said, do you ever watch Only Fools and Horses? And most of them had at least some people who said, yes. And then one particular excerpt they all remembered. It's not on YouTube. Anyway, you can find it on YouTube if you want to, and if you don't remember what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the scene in the pub where Trigger interrupts some conversation, which has got nothing to do with the subject, saying, "See this old broom?" And they look at him and think, "What in the world's he talking about?" And he says, "It's had 17 new handles and 9 new brushes. I've never had to have a new broom in all the years." And Jason looks at him and says, "How can it be the same broom then?" And he produces a photograph and says, "I've got a photograph to prove it. What more do you want?" So, if you the whole sequence is on YouTube. It's worth rechecking anyway. It's not even the first use of it. David Jason had the same joke on a programme called Arkwright's before Trigger, but that's the one people know. And then again, the same idea, more American version, is Grandfather's Axe. Exactly the same as Trigger's broom, really. You replace the handle, you replace the axe, is it still Grandfather's Axe? Now, in my view, that's a very different question from the one that is quite often posed in America, where they call it Washington's axe. If it's Washington's axe, in my view, and Washington hasn't touched or used any part of it, because both the handle and the axe have been replaced, to me that's just a replica. I don't think that comes, personally, I don't think that arises in this same discussion. The thing with Trigger and Grandfather is that they only, in their view, only had one broom or one axe, and they retained it through their lifetime. That is a different situation, as far as I'm concerned, from a museum replacing parts of Washington's axe, but that's how I feel. Anyway, the thing is, all I'm doing is getting us off that silly thing. I'm going to show you something even more relevant, in my view, anyway, because this is nearer home. I don't know whether you recognise it, but this is the flagship of the first Sea Lord of the Royal Navy. And it seems to me that it exemplifies a modern version of the whole ship of Theseus. It's been in dry dock since 1922. It's described as a 104-gun, first-rate ship of the line of the Royal Navy, ordered in 1758, laid down in 1759, and launched in 1765. We're now in 2016. She's best known as Lord Nelson's flagship at the Battle of Trafalgar. But she was also Keppel's flagship at Ushant, Howe's flagship at Cape Spartel, Jervis's flagship at Cape St. Vincent. And from 1824, she served as a harbour ship. She was moved to dry dock in Portsmouth in 1922, and she was preserved then as a museum ship. But since October 2012, she's been the flagship of the First Sea Lord, and she is described proudly as the world's oldest naval ship still in commission. Well, she's got an identity today. But is she the same ship? In other words, is she identical with, in any way, the original, which was laid down in 1759, or the one that sailed upon by Nelson at Trafalgar? And if she's not identical, how can that statement be true, that she's the oldest naval ship still in commission? And if it is true, in some way, well, what is the way? When people visit her, what are they visiting? It surely depends on their personal interests. When I went, I was more concerned with the imagining of me seeing what Nelson had seen, walking where he had been. But was I? And anyway, other people go and see things about the Navy. Are they seeing the same Navy? Are we in any way walking on the ship laid down in 1758? Notice I'm only asking questions, not answering them. There she is again. So, during my non-peer-reviewed casual research, as mentioned above, one of the men in the audience came up to me and said, "I'm one of the people responsible for keeping the Victory in good order." That's why she's turned up here. He says, "Recently, currently, they are replacing the wooden planks with non-wooden planks. So they're not even replacing them with the same materials. They're using man-made materials because the wood is moving, wearing out too quickly." That seems to me to add in another equation. Nearly all the guns on it, and I don't know whether the full amount is there, are replicas. All the ships of the period had to offload their guns before going into harbour, which seems a sensible thing. So they're not going to be the same ones that were put back on. As far as they know, there's only 3 original guns on board, and only one of those is certainly to have been used at Trafalgar, and we don't know who by. interesting thought. Is it the same ship? Is it the oldest ship still in commission? Anyway, here's a further extension. Go back to Theseus's ship. Supposing that when it sails into harbour, there's nowhere to put the ship. You've got no suitable dock. But it's only made of planks and oars, so we take it apart. Take all the planks apart, pile them in a shed, put the sails along the side, stack the oars up on the side. And in the spring, you take them all out again and build the ship. Was it a ship while it was just planks in the shed? Ships sail. Planks don't. Not on their own. Another question. And if it wasn't a ship while it was still in the ship, what in heaven's name was it? All right, one more of those, in case you've not got the message. What's that? Yes, is it? Well, yes, it is. But if I, because this is an old picture. Yes. But it has now, or will have within a year or so, exactly that same appearance, so possibly without the staining on the top of one of the chimneys. It has been converted by a Malaysian company into luxury flats. But in order to be able to do that, they had to guarantee that all the chimneys will be replaced by identical replicas, but not made of the same material because it has to be safer, but that they will match the colour and make it look as though it is the same material, so that if you're looking from a distance, if you take that photograph again in a couple of years' time, it will still look like that. And we've got the original plans from the 30s, so we know exactly that the chimneys will be the same. So, Battersea Power Station. It doesn't produce power, and it's made of different materials by different people. Is it Battersea Power Station? So, I could go on forever, but I'm not going to, because that would be silly, and it's only answering the first part of the scheme where we were supposed to find some answers. So, here are the principal questions. Going back to Theseus. If he takes his ship in for repair every time he docks, and then he sails with one or more new parts, is he still sailing the ship of Theseus? And if he's not, at what point does it cease to be? On the other hand, if it's preserved, like the Victory after his death, as Plutarch was writing, and every conceivable part is replaced over time, possibly more than once, possibly by different people using different techniques, is it still the ship of Theseus? So, we've got to give some sort of answers. I've already told you my personal answer with regard to Washington's axe. I don't think it comes into the same category. But Chigger's broom, grandfather's axe, they would certainly argue that they were on the same thing. Suppose, for example, here's one. I did say to somebody I wasn't going to use any words that were unusual. In case there's anybody who doesn't know the meaning of mereological, which obviously I didn't, because I can't even say it properly, what it means is that the identity of an object is dependent on the identity of its component parts. So people who believe in mereology believe that two things are identical only if all the component parts are identical. Ship A in 1758 is identical to that one in 1958 only if every part A is identical with every part B. But then again, that doesn't help, because, and I'm calling this MTI, so if that turns up, we're talking about this theory of parts. Supposing that Theseus actually gets on his ship and sails it, and as he sails there is a repair ship following along behind, which has spare parts. Okay, so every time they have to replace a part, they chuck the old one overboard, and he goes around and slays some more monsters or flirts with Ariadne or something for quite a long time, until several slain monsters later he sails into harbour on a ship in which every single part has been replaced. Is he still on the ship of Theseus? Well, of course, says Theseus. It's my ship. I got on it. I've been on it. I've never left it. And here I am getting off it. How can there be any question about that? However, you have to be able to accept that there is a ship A that he set sail on, a ship B that he landed on, where each part has been replaced. There are two complete sets of parts. So there are actually two ships in question, the one on which he left sail, ship A, and the one on which he arrived, ship B. But you could still agree with him that this is still his ship until the people who are on the repair ship sail in after him, having cunningly saved every single part that was chucked overboard. And while they're sailing, they have been reconstructing the ship on which he originally sailed. It is now fully reconstructed because the whole of the previous one has been replaced. They sail in, they moor alongside ship C. So you've now got two ships in the harbour. The NTI, on the meteorological basis, ship C is the ship of Theseus, because it's identical in every part to the original one that set sail. Now, Theseus has never stood on, well, he has stood on those planks, but in that form, he didn't think, as far as he's concerned, the one he landed on is the ship of Theseus. He doesn't want the second-hand taffy one, he wants the one that he's repaired. He's not going to get to sail to sea on the ship C. So which one would you describe as the ship of Theseus? Is any of them so? Well, it seems to me that MTI is just too detailed, too strong, it's no good. So we try something else. Spatio-temporal continuity. STI. In other words, there has been, this is Theseus's argument for when he lands on the ship he's in. He has been on that ship all the time. There has always been a ship underneath him called the ship of Theseus. Through space and time, that has remained his ship. Yeah? So that leaves us with another alternative to see whether it fits. So you've got Theseus setting sail on his ship A, arrives on ship B. Spatial temporal continuity says that that is ship of Theseus. But MTI says ship C is the ship of Theseus. So we've still got two, and neither of them has allowed for the one that I put in where we disassemble and reassemble the ship, because neither of them fits that. So maybe neither of them's any good to us. Does it matter? Perhaps it's just an intriguing puzzle from long, long ago. And we've got better things to think about, and we'll go and watch the test match, which is what I did at this stage of my talk, when I was preparing it, that was. There's no DI on today, too, so I'd better make sure I finish quickly. Anyway, there are plenty of people who would agree that it doesn't matter, let's just get on with life and stop thinking so much. Shakespeare might agree, for example, because he thought men who thought too much were dangerous. However, it seems to me much more dangerous to leave this question of identity open. Because think of the number of areas affected by it right now in different parts of the world. Remember the argument which was accepted by pretty well the whole world when Russia invaded and took over, or she would say took back, took over Crimea. Oh, well, they have Russian identity. That was his argument for going. That was the argument for letting him have it. He just took over another country on the basis of national identity. Isn't that the same argument that was used by Hitler when he was invading Austria? They're still using similar arguments in the Ukraine and trying to hive off part of the Ukraine on the question of identity. Why do we call the terrorist force the so-called Islamic State? Because the power of words, isn't it? We are afraid that if we say the Islamic State, we are giving them statehood. Isn't that really what it's all about? We are afraid of providing them with an actual identity as a state. We've got to combat terrorism, so we've got to learn, it's vital to learn, to understand how mind works, how people make decisions, what identity is, why people are the way they are. This isn't a small, insignificant problem at all. One of my personal hobbies is prisons, because I believe very firmly there should be no death penalty, and I write to people on death row. So I study prisons, and there's a recent result come from Norway, where prison is seen as a place to rehabilitate, that is, to change offenders. So in their prisons, each prisoner has a little group of three rooms to himself and television access and so on, and rehabilitative therapies and so on. The recidivism rate, the rate of people who return to prison after release from Norway is less than a quarter, 24%. That may sound like a lot. But in America, where the prison regimes, shall we say, leave a lot to be desired, over 76% repeat offend and get back into prison. And some of those, possibly, who still repeat offending haven't been caught again the second time. It simply fails as a rehabilitation punishment. And severe punishment doesn't change people's ideas. Again, in America, the American states which still have a death penalty have many more murders committed than the states where it doesn't. So you can't say it's a deterrent. It doesn't work. I think we need to think in detail and very carefully what a person's identity is and whether it can be changed over a lifetime. I don't have a definitive answer. I've got some more questions, though. What is identity? Now, my son-in-law, and many others like him, spends most of his time restoring old cars. Is he preserving their original identity? If he uses replica old parts, if he doesn't, if he removes the rust, same idea of the victory. I was told the other day, in fact, that an old car remains an old car as long as it's got the manufacturer's label. Everything else can be changed, provided you've got the bit that said it was published, whatever they do, manufactured by Rolls-Royce in 1933 or whatever. But if you haven't got that, even if you've used an actual part from eBay of every single thing that was made in 33, so that everything is original, like our ship C with Theseus, that doesn't count because you haven't got the manufacturer's label. That's just the way people get round things, isn't it? And of course there are other people who say that everything all the time is a constant state of flux. Nothing is ever the same from minute to minute. But I would prefer to think about common sense, because that's what common sense is, what common people, non-philosophers, are using in the ordinary decisions they make in everyday life. So when we talk about things being identical, when we think about our own identity, what exactly do we mean and why does it matter? Again, I'm not going into souls, because that is that's a question of belief, and I'm not going in that direction. I'm not going into nihilism, because of no point. It seems to me what we're asking is, what can we know and how can we know it about ourselves or about objects, but in this case I'm taking it to ourselves. It could be argued that Wittgenstein would simply say, I'm playing a language game here. And again, it could be argued that way, but as far as I'm concerned, when I ask the people about have they heard of the ship of Theseus, I also ask them whether they believed that they were the same person that they were 20 years ago. And almost everybody, not quite, but almost everybody said, no, of course not. The question didn't seem to them obscure. And while I didn't take any of their ideas further, each of them clearly had some idea of what constituted their identity as a person and a strong belief that it was subject to alteration. Think about those prisoners released from Norway's jails. The good, upstanding citizens who come out and hold down a job are not the same person, in some ways anyway, as the person who went in. Their identity, they're no longer a criminal. Their identity has changed. And I certainly share that belief. Let's say 25 years ago, personal history coming up. 25 years ago I was married, I was a teacher in a special school, I also taught Suzuki violin and Kumon maths. I weighed a great deal more than I do today, believe it or not. Though I prefer it to be less still. And I lived in Hastings and I have no plans to leave. Today, the school has been closed. I am a widow. I nursed and accompanied my husband through his last illness. I watched him die. That changes you. There's no two ways about it. I'm retired, though I still occasionally tutor. I've sold my Cumin business. I can't play the violin. Mind you, I never could very well. I have adult grandchildren. I've seen them grown up from babyhood to adulthood. That changes you, doesn't it? I've unexpectedly travelled widely since he died. I've been a companion on many expensive cruises all around the Scottish Islands to an old lady who happened to be a millionaire and paid for me. I've taught English in Russia. I've been gold panning in Siberia. You might be glad to hear I didn't get any, because I might have been locked up if I had. I've been to the Rockies, I've been to Egypt. I wasn't expecting any of these things. I've become an advisor to schools in the Gambia. And all of these have been indirect or direct outcomes of my husband's death. And all of them, in my view, have been character and life identity-changing experiences. I am not the person that I was. I believe myself to be a different person. I behave, I think, and I argue differently from when I did. But common sense also says I've got a passport, I think it's out of date, which gives my name, date of birth, and nobody doubts that I'm the actual person who was born on such and such a date, whose parents in Hereford. I'm English back so many generations, because I come from lower class origins, so you can't go back too far. So obviously I have an identity through time as well. So are we discussing word usage after all? Is it that there are two words, both called identity, but meaning two different things? Is there an idea conveyed by the word ship or river which enables us to identify a particular ship or a river in this century with that of the same name 200 years ago? So, I said that this particular thought experiment poses lots of questions. I didn't say whether any of them are answerable. So many great minds have gone through and discussed it and have come down on one side or the other. And I had a bibliography, which I didn't read in its full, in its entirety. You could write a book just listing the bibliography where the ship of Theseus is mentioned or studied. You could probably have a bibliography from 2000 to 2016 covering that. It's an area which an awful lot of people have been examining fairly recently. So why does it matter? Well, I don't know about you, but I've given power of attorney to my daughter to be triggered when I am no longer capable of making decisions for myself. So when should it be triggered? By whom? Who makes the decisions? I have a very close friend from university, and she now has advanced Alzheimer's. She doesn't know me. She doesn't know her own background. She doesn't obviously live in her own house. Is she still the same person who was my friend? I'll tell you honestly now, I can't visit her because it hurts me too much not to be known, to be treated as a total irritating stranger. She has the same body, but does she have the same identity? And that's a, well, let's hope not a growing problem, but dementia is a major problem, isn't it? Is identity the same as personhood? Well, out of all the theories, some obscure, some obscure, articles about perdurance and endurance, Leibniz's law and the first and second orders of meaning, all of which were too deep for me, I've chosen one which at the least I can understand and I can repeat it to end with. In the book is called The Outer Limits of Reason, What Science, Mathematics and Logic Cannot Tell Us by Yanofsky. And he points out that classifying and naming are learned skills. Children do not learn exact definitions of things because they are never exposed to exact definitions. They learn to classify and name physical stimuli. The concept of the number four is exact and has a clear definition, but they gradually think about the word dog, for example. They must be shown over and over and over again different dogs and told it's a dog. It's fuzzy at the edges. So, is the ship of Theseus the same after changing one plank? He claims that the proper response is that the definition we have for the ship is not clear enough to provide an answer to that question. There is no exact definition of the ship of Theseus. We only have what we learned, that is the stimuli we were taught to associate with the ship. It doesn't really exist as an object. There's no exact definition because it exists as a collection of sensations. If you kick it, you hurt yourself. If you lick it, you get a salt taste. If you look at it, you see some brown wood. In the case of the Victory, you've seen brown substitute man-made materials, but it comes to that. But these are simply sensations we learn to associate with something called the ship of Theseus. Human beings combine these sensations and form it. Of course, the ship exists as atoms, but it's made of atoms as atoms. They're not specific atoms called ship's atoms. They're just atoms. We make those atoms into a whole entity called a ship. And we further demarcate this ship as belonging to the mythical general Theseus. It's all in our mind. We are fortunate to live among other people who learn to give the same name to commonly occurring external stimuli. So each of us, in this case, calls these similar stimuli the ship of Theseus. And since we all agree with this naming convention, we don't commit each other to insane asylums. Nevertheless, he claims, the ship of Theseus is an illusion. So, does that mean my identity is also an illusion? How about yours? That's all.
Your own questions, or would you like to be chaired?
Oh, Jesus. Are there any questions?
Yeah.
Well, there's not many. We'll do one, two, three, yes, and see where we go.
Okay.
John?
I think the problem here is the idea that identity is some sort of specific concept. Nobody, in fact, for the most part, has the slightest trouble with saying this is the same as that. Because the context reveals the purpose or the respect in which they're the same. And once you've decided about why it matters whether they're the same or not, then you get down to not mysterious stuff about identity, you get down to the specifics that we're talking about. So if the question of the ship of Theseus is, to use more or less the example I gave, who has the rights of ownership over it? Okay, we know specifically what we need to find out. We don't need to ask mysterious questions about identity. We just need to ask questions about ownership, about title, about buying and selling. If it's a question of is it an adequate replica, then again we know what questions to ask. We never get tied up and we never illuminate any such discussion. Once we've focused it on why do you want to know, the question of identity disappears. I've got 17 identities, I've probably got 35 identities. If I want to, I have 135. For what purpose is somebody asking me, are you the same person? And once they've identified what the purpose of the question is, then there are specific things that one then gets to answer it. You never have to ask yourself, what do I mean by identity?
Okay, so how does that fit in with, for example, the idea of state identity and the right of Russia to take over the Crimea? Or the idea of not giving ISIS a state?
Again, if one is asking about recognition in the United Nations, then you can very straightforwardly say whether or not ISIS is recognised by the United Nations. It wasn't. As far as I know, the Crimea was. You know,
Does that justify?
It's just arbitrary. There's a different question then, is what is it that justifies somebody sending troops in? And there are all sorts of answers to that, but they don't turn on general questions of identity.
You can get there from there, though. I think what this project does, I totally understand what you're saying, that it is a specific answer to a specific question which usually arises. But it seems to me that going back to those prisoners in America, if they have, I mean, the people I write to, I've got two prisoners currently I'm writing to on two different death rows. Both of them have been in jail for over 20 years. One of them at least was under 20 when he was, well, he actually did kill somebody. He turned himself in because he had killed somebody while on drugs, was absolutely appalled when he came round, went straight to the police station. He's never had a fair trial. He's never had a trial of peers. He because he confessed, he's been put in jail, and for the last 20-odd years, it's been a question of shall we kill him and when should we kill him? He's been in solitary confinement for all that time. And they're going to kill him, eventually, if they can find him the right drugs. But who are they killing? They're not killing that 19-year-old who was on drugs. Is it right to kill somebody 40 years after who has become a completely different person?
I mean, and obviously there's a lot of argument about that, but I don't see that any of the argument can be illumined in any way or other than fogged by asking what do we really mean by identity. You're only asking, is it just to kill this person?
Okay, but there is a word identity out there and we use it and we have identity cards.
We have them, and we have them for specific purposes. And, you know, as I say, there are many purposes. There's as many as you care to invent or enumerate. And all that matters in a particular context is what is the purpose of the question, and then you get down to real
So, fair enough. I think you're actually coming down on the side of the one I ended with, which is that the question of the ship of Theseus is an illusion, because what you're talking about is saying that each thing is a separate decision on different in different contexts. It means
I'm
something else.
It's an illusion. I'm saying it needs to be specified. That's
yeah, but as it as a single entity, I think what you're saying is that it is a meaningless question, which is what Yanofsky is saying. Sorry.
If somebody asked, what is the ship of Theseus, some stranger or somebody in one of your group, your research group that you all talk to, the real answer is, it's a puzzle. not it's an illusion or a ship or anything like that. Or a story. It's a puzzle story. It's a thought experiment. One of those.
It's a paradox. So a lot of people say it's a paradox. I don't. Okay. I'm not convinced by that. You notice I haven't used that word. But
words you could use. All of them abstract, by the way. None of them concrete. And it has been said, the phrase history is identity. Now, I think perhaps one should turn that. That was intended, I think, as a kind of fatalistic experiment.
Very fatalistic.
And there's something a bit Hegelian about it. But you could also say that identity is history. In the case of Crimea, that's certainly true. All the arguments about Crimea centered on the history of Crimea rather than on even the democracy of Crimea or any of those other sorts of ideas or independence. And in the case of the ship of Theseus, what is central is the story. There is no puzzle here. Everything we need to know is laid out. We are told everything about the ship of Theseus, the fugitive ship of Theseus, everything. There is nothing missing at all. There are no replacement parts. The only replacement parts might be in our theory of identity before and after we've listened to the story. All these things are abstracts. So, to place one's idea of identity or of anything else up to that into a concrete object. What is a Cambrian rock? It's the history of that piece of rock.
So the victory is in fact, because of history, identical with the one laid down in 1758.
Well, it certainly wouldn't be there if it weren't for its history, or our history, or Nelson's history, or Napoleon's history. That's the only reason for its existence, its continuing existence, if you can call it continuing. It doesn't really matter. Actually, following on from Jonathan, the real reason is there is because people want to visit it.
Exactly, and the same as the Battersea Power Station, people want to see those chimneys.
Exactly.
But it's a bit strange calling it the power station.
The reason for those chimneys is deeply stupid, but that's not going
to happen. Sorry, yes, sir.
I want to say a word for spatio-temporal continuity.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with Jonathan, that it depends on what people are interested in or intending by the question, if it's the same thing. But your example about old cars and the name plate is an example where people have a specific purpose. I think it's one purpose is admission to the Brighton car run. A car has to have some kind of certified authenticity. And it may be absolutely like what it was at the beginning, your ship B replica. But it's interesting that it has to be physically continuous to the extent that it's got a nameplate which really is a continuous piece from a real car from that day. And that gives it an extra stamp. And I know for a fact that people value these cars.
That is part of the crux of it.
That certification, according to how much of the car is continuous.
But without that certification,
a replica which has just got that silly little bit on it. But that's still an interesting example, it seems to me, of the purpose to have an institutional ruling which determines whether it's the same car or not.
And Jonathan's version, it would make a huge difference in terms of cost if you're selling it on eBay.
Well, sure, but that's right. So it still does use this element of spatio-temporal continuity as something objective, as a criterion for the institutional purpose of the ruling. And in a way, I think this reads across to the issues of personal identity. That every cell in our body, we're told, changes every 7 years. But the spatiotemporal continuity, I think Strawson in individuals points to the physical continuity of a body as a kind of criterion for being the same person in some sense. And as you were saying, there are various senses in question of personal identity of what you're.
Well, one thing I'd like,
you
could put the word personhood, you've used personal several times, it's personhood, person.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a way out of some of it,
yeah.
by thinking of personhood, because I think we're identity cultures.
It follows on from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got two people bursting to give a question. You did start 5 minutes late, but we must stop at 20 past. Okay, so... Very quickly.
Just for my understanding, so where does identity reside now? Does it reside with the object, or does it reside with the person thinking about, oh, this is the same ship? So
that's a very good question, and I add it to my list of questions.
Yeah, okay. So it's not a clear answer to
that. Absolutely not, no.
Because when you think about psychology and how object recognition works, so it seems like we make sense of the world by applying certain.
This is what Janowski's claiming, that it is really within the person, I guess.
Okay.
This is a very good question that perhaps would be a good one to raise again in the general discussion. Mm-hmm. I don't think nearly enough has been said about identity this morning.
And you said one
anyway,
more.
Sean is bursting to ask a quick question.
It's not so much a question, but I thought I might make a couple of observations.
Please.
I cut my IT teeth on IT systems for the identification of terrorists.
Oh, right.
Identification. I then developed that through my career by being the program director for the development of the biometric passport. Identity, what characteristics do we contain inside the chip that goes in your passport? I also had a sub-project at the same time on facial recognition to eliminate fake identities, particularly from immigrants who would borrow each other's passports. My hero is very big at this. I also have been involved in the development of biometric identification systems, which are used today when you stop by the police, they take your fingerprint,
mm-hmm.
that identifies you, signal goes back, comes forward, and it says, you're not Fred, and that's part, your ownership, you're Jimmy, who's been nipped and's got 3 warrants outstanding. So the practical side of identification has been handled, maybe not successfully entirely, one way or another. Well, it's been identified. It works in that you can identify a number of people on the streets who have been doing certain things. You can do that.
Yeah.
And it is successful enough to get the right person a huge percentage of the time. So it avoids many of these arguments. And I think your question comes into it because the identification resides a mixture of the object has a continuity from birth. Probably is the start point for everything.
That I think
and
is
the change is added to it, and at some point the change is quasi-stabilized. That is, facial recognition is incredibly accurate, despite what you may.
But
think.
That is very, very specifically that
it
one
is,
aspect,
but it is still
which is the one of identity card.
Yeah.
I know it's a much detailed identity card, but it's still that one
it's
aspect.
Using the same term and the same way of trying.
So
to
somebody looks me up, finds my identity, and says, oh, Peggy, can you give me violin lessons? No. I don't have that identity as a violin teacher anymore. I can't play the violin. You know, I think it answers part of the question very clearly. We do have a continuing identity as a person from birth to death. And common sense tells us that anyway. But I don't think that solves the problem. Oh, I think there's too many other questions left hanging.
Okay, we do need to stop there. Thank you very much, Peggy.